Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast with your host, Evan McElwain.
Welcome back to the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast. I'm Evan McElwain, Bowery Capital's Director of Growth, and this week we are joined by Diego Gomez, Founder and CEO of Rock Content, to talk about shifting from field sales to inside sales. Great to have you on the show, Diego.
It's my pleasure. I'm a big fan of the podcast.
Awesome. So, Diego, tell us a little bit about you, your background, and the company you founded, Rock Content.
Perfect. So, my name is Diego. I am a passionate digital marketer. I've been in the content and digital marketing space for almost a decade now. I started Rock Content 7 years ago with three friends to help companies create, publish, promote, and distribute content in a more efficient way. Today, we are around 400 people, 2,000 customers, mostly enterprise, and growing, learning different sales models, inside sales and field sales, making them play together.
Awesome. And one thing we always like to ask our guests, Diego, is what is one thing that no one listening to this podcast will know about you?
Well, I think I am a failed musician. I love playing the guitar, trying to master a few Steve Moore solos, but failing.
And has COVID given you a little bit more time to practice or not really?
Not really.
Well, so to kick us off, Diego, can you just maybe help explain for our audience, for those who aren't familiar, what are we even talking about when we say, you know, field sales versus inside sales?
Yeah, so when you think about Oracle or IBM or the large enterprise software, it was the initial go-to-market model for sales. When I think field sales, I think steak dinners, living on airplanes. I like it a lot, by the way. It's just, I would say, slightly older model. Works very well for bringing large deals, high contract values, complex deals with multiple stakeholders. And inside sales is selling with Zoom, with Skype. I like to say that companies such as HubSpot, Zendesk, I would say the newest SaaS players, they are all embracing inside sales. And inside sales can be consultative, can handle complex deals. I think that's one of the beauty of it. But typically, it focuses on shorter sales cycles and lower ACVs.
Got it. And so to keep going there, what are some of the common maybe myths or misconceptions about the two models, right? Field and inside sales. You started touching on one of inside sales, that it can be consultative. But maybe if you just want to dig into to any other misconceptions that are out there.
Yeah, I would say that this one is likely the biggest one. Inside sales, you go and people try the product and it's a call to close operation. More often than not lately, we're seeing companies doing complex consultative sales processes for smaller AVs and even landing big deals. So the fundamental skills for someone who works in sales, in inside sales, do not change that much. It can be and it has to be consultative for SaaS success. I would say another myth that I see often is that inside sales is only for smaller deals and it doesn't work for enterprise. I tend to challenge that argument a lot. In our experience, we closed a few hundreds of thousands of dollars deals through inside sales, complex deals, multiple stakeholders. And this was before COVID. So you can bring big deals with inside sales. Obviously, that's the case when it's not one or the other. Combining the best of both worlds is the ideal case. And I would say that inside sales will replace field sales. For me, that's a myth. They will coexist. And the way I see these two models working together is more often than not, you see companies having the first customer experience being handled through inside sales, or at least the qualification. Maybe you even sell an entry-level contract and then you combine with field sales for landing and expanding models.
Yeah, I think that makes complete sense. And what I've seen work really well in the past is as companies lead with that inside sales model for all the efficiencies that we'll kind of get into today, once they maybe get towards the end of their sales process, maybe they finally get in front of that, you know, CFO or the economic buyer for sort of the big meeting, that's a good time maybe to go in person when you know, when we're not in a pandemic, obviously, but there certainly can be a nice kind of harmony there in finding the right balance. So one other question, sort of as we keep this high level, Diego, before we dive deep, can you maybe just give our listeners a brief kind of history of SaaS sales as it's evolved over the past couple of decades? You mentioned IBM and how field sales played a really big role in the beginning of just technology sales in general, but would love to just get all of our listeners up to speed on, you know, how this balance has changed and evolved over time.
It all started with, I would say, I'm not saying that Oracle was the first one, but very likely among the pioneers. IBM should have been there even before that, definitely. But essentially in the past, technology wasn't as pervasive as it is today. Customers weren't aware of the problem you solved. And more often than not, they didn't even knew they needed an ERP system or a new technology that would improve their business. And the need for visiting the customer to educate, to show, to demo, that's how it all started. And the deals back then, big enterprise software used to be super expensive, huge multi-year licenses, even perpetual licensing to cover for these costs, the travel costs, the dinner, the airplanes. It's a model that keeps working. I'm not saying that field sales doesn't work anymore today. It keeps working very well. But as the time changed, the more technology, more communication infrastructure, there was a need for a lighter touch model. Back then, demand generation used to be advertising on magazines, on software magazines, running only events as a marketing channel. And today we have very different and evolving marketing playbooks. I would say inbound marketing and content marketing changed the way the customers learn about their problems, products to solve those. And that meant a very big change. I would say the first generation of SaaS IPOs, like the Salesforces of the world, they were still very focused on field sales, but they were starting to learn inside sales. I would say today we see more and more companies listing and achieving hundreds of millions in revenues with inside sales, remote sales process. And I would say the biggest change on this playbook is, in the past it was, you were paying a lot, the customer were paying a lot because you had a very hard time educating the customer. Today the customer is self-educating. He's more interested in you pointing him towards the resources. Not always, but more often than not, they want to learn by themselves before they want to talk to sales. So inside sales supplements field sales, and you can bring customers with entry-level ACVs and then expand, or you can use inside sales to cover the top and of the funnel, and then, as you mentioned, you fly for getting the contract signed. I think that's the transformation we are seeing. Brands want the customer to experience what value do you bring to the table as fast as possible. And inside sales helps on that.
Yeah, it's interesting. So when you think about, there's a few different things at play here. There's customers that actually want to do more self-education kind of on their own timeline. Maybe it's because it's asynchronous. There's this element of new technologies that are sprouting up that are making inside sales more easy, more effective, easier to get up and running, like Zoom, Slack, all the tools that we have today. And then there's also that element that you mentioned of, you know, when you have a robust field sales team that's going out and they're taking clients to expensive dinners and they're flying all over the country and they're racking up T&E costs, ultimately that ends up getting put back on the customer who's helping, you know, pay for all of that. And so as more SaaS solutions have come to market, just as a natural shift in a more competitive landscape, inside sales has also just become more popular as a result of that too. So it's kind of interesting to see all those different components playing a role. So one other question on the shift, and this is maybe extremely obvious of a question, but also it's kind of the elephant in the room, just given we're recording this during, you know, this COVID-19 pandemic. Can you talk a little bit about just how recent events and COVID have exacerbated this shift that we've been seeing happened over the last decade or so?
Yeah, COVID has been a massive accelerator for inside sales. I'm a big fan of Zoom, and I always read their quarterly reports. And I am always trying to understand how they are selling those big elephant deals to companies in a remote way. And it's done. It's a reality now. Global pandemic. I need 10,000 licenses of communication infrastructure. I now sign these kinds of deals with going through procurement to legal, each person in its home. And you have to work every stakeholder through remote processes. So I think Zoom, Slack having great quarters, it's a big sign of this transformation. I would say that because companies are now distributed, you have to work with these multiple stakeholders spread all over the world. So today I have procurement in Canada. I have team in Mexico, US. I am in Brazil. If you want to sell a big deal to my company, you have to go remote. And that's what COVID made. It became harder to secure those meetings, those stakeholders. So I see it as a massive accelerator. In our case as well, we were able to land a few very big deals, 100% remote, and it's here to stay.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I forget the exact stat, but something like over 6 people on average are part of a purchasing decision for B2B software. And when you think about that, coupled with the fact that offices are getting more distributed and more spread out all over the world, inside sales is the natural model that evolves to navigate that, to sort of sell the way that your buyer is set up structurally.
We were already seeing the customer changing their habits. We were seeing them researching a lot more and self-educating before. But in a post-COVID world, he is online looking for immediate solutions. And some of the problems were even created now, but they likely existed before. Every company needed content or remote infrastructure. This made things more urgent. And imagine if you had to wait for the sales rep to be able to book a trip to your city to get the 6 people in a room. A lot of companies would have gone out of business. And it's been a very powerful force for my industry, content marketing, for remote communications, but essentially all the problems, they are still very relevant.
And so, Diego, we've talked about some of the macro trends that are behind this shift. And now I want to get a little bit more micro and kind of more into the why. Why is this happening? We've talked about some of it at a high level, but would love to get a little bit deeper. So for companies that are still leveraging a field sales model today, if you had to kind of lay out the reasons why, you know, why should they seriously think about transitioning to an inside sales org structure? How do you think through that?
I think the economics of inside sales are very different from the economics of field sales. So the first step for me would be doing an exercise and understanding how would our economics look like? How would our customer acquisition costs reduce? How would our marketing strategy have to change to deal in this context? Because in the past, we wanted to land big deals and expect them to renew ad eternum. Now we are seeing more of entry level ACV, not focused on deal size, but on deal LTV, and typically with scaling expansion. That's the first thing, understanding their economics assumptions. But the good news is every software as a service sales organization right now is an inside sales organization. So the hardest part is done. I wouldn't suggest to a company to completely flip and say we are 100% inside sales until they understand these economics. But that's an experience that they shouldn't abandon after the COVID is over, when people are back to a more normal life. Inside sales is here to stay. They might need to readapt marketing, educate more, provide value. It's not just product demos. You have to educate the customer on each of the pains that they feel. And typically for any sales experiment that I see my teams doing or companies that I angel invested, I say, start with a sales MVP. A sales MVP for me is two reps with very clear unit economics and compare that against your system. And that would be my first advice. Another possible path would be as well to try to buy the top of the funnel and act on the top of the funnel leads and processes on inside sales before passing on to field sales. The classic Aaron Ross approach, I think it's a very good way for companies that maybe are not able to shift product strategy faster or change pricing so much. They could get a lot of efficiency by embracing either an inbound customer acquisition machine and an inside sales qualification machine, but also leveraging inside sales for outbound prospecting.
Got it. And that was going to be my next question is, you know, once companies realize they need to make the shift, or if they've already kind of started with that, mapping out what the math looks like and figuring out their CAC and how that's going to change their model, sort of how to get started, right? Going into the kind of action and execution phase. And so it sounds like taking the MVP approach, you know, like most things in startups, is the right way to go. And start with a couple reps, see how they do, see how they perform relative to your assumptions in this new model. And you can also have them focus on top of funnel as a really efficient way to get through some of those top of funnel leads, figure out which ones you should be focusing in on with your more expensive field sales reps that then can drive them further through the pipeline. So that makes a ton of sense. If we were to continue on this path, right? So once companies get that going, are there any other tips that you have for them as they continue down that inside sales path? Maybe the things that you've learned from your experience at Rock or other companies as you've obviously worked with both field and inside sales, and maybe some of the growing pains that go with that transition?
I think really that isn't a lot of silver bullets here. It's really about an MVP approach and experimentation. But one thing that it's even more critical in inside sales than field sales is the effort to capture attention. Because in a field sales world, in an in-person meeting, you have the person full attention for, let's say, 1 hour. And in this world, people are trying software, they are filling forms, researching a lot about your product. And more often than not, they are comparing you with a lot of competitors, looking at pricing pages. So you really have to be able to become a strong attention grabber. And the way to do that is to, in my opinion, is really to nail one core pain point of the lead and really quantify that as soon as possible. Because if you can quantify a pain, and you can, you have a very clear pain on each prospect, you get their attention. And after that, the sales motion, the pacing can change, but the typical process does not change as much as before. Another very important element that I would say comes to play now is the self-education thing. Customers have tried your products, tried the competitive products. They read your Zendesk and Capterra in your blog. It's mandatory in inside sales for success that you have product experts, you have industry experts. And in the old, less specialized way, you would have sales engineers flying with you and helping to build the case. Right now, if the customer knows more about your product in your industry than you do, you're going to be in a tight spot. So really building this skill sets of attention grabbing and really going into one pain, quantifying it, and also making them become real experts in the industry.
And that kind of lends itself well to what I wanted to get into next was really the sales motion itself. And how does the selling motion need to change as companies go through this transition to more of an inside sales model, as well as, you know, how do the sales rep skills need to evolve and adapt to that change? And you've already kind of touched on it, right? It's the sales motion, it's likely going to speed up. It sounds like there's a product element here where the product also needs to lend itself to that inside sales motion, maybe, you know, being simpler to understand, being simpler to demo over a Zoom call, or even being such that the prospect can trial it themselves. And then from a skills perspective, you touched on the importance of being able to really grab someone's attention despite not having that in-person presence. Are there any other kind of major pieces here that we should touch on as it relates to selling motion adjustments and kind of sales rep skills as it pertains to that?
Sure. Before Jim, just going back to the sales rep skills, I think one very important strategic aspect to take into consideration is accepting that the future is not either inside or field sales. It's a mix of both. And if you're doing only one or the other, you're likely not optimized to capture the benefits of the full spectrum. So as a leader, I think it's a really important opportunity to rethink your product pricing and versions. It's something that really becomes infrastructure for setting the inside sales motion. If you don't have the right pricing and product packaging that works on both worlds, your enterprise plans and your entry-level, lower-touch plans, you're going to have a hard time adapting, even if you put those two great sales reps to work.
Great point. Like, these things don't happen in silos, and they can't be successful in a vacuum. And you've got to kind of take that holistic approach to see how does your pricing and packaging need to change? How does the rest of the product elements of it, or the rest of the revenue side of the house, whether it be customer success or how you engage with your clients over time, adapt? It's got to be kind of this entire package in order for the whole thing to really work and hum along.
Exactly. And when it comes to the sales rep skills, I think now you need to more than ever be great at education, attention, and inside sales has a bigger demand generation component. It's not like order taking. You really have to be consultative to differentiate yourself, especially with inbound marketing channels, because when you look at why people tested your product or created a free account, what you notice is a lot of people are doing that just for curiosity. And some might not like, but those are great opportunities if you are able to create real demand and go to find the why they did that decision to sign up for your product in that specific day, and connect that with the benefit you add. So you really have to be better at attention and education.
You bring up an interesting point there at the end, which kind of gets into how moving towards an inside sales model and shifting away from field sales actually kind of changes the level of effort it takes to get into the pipeline. If in a fully inside sales world, maybe they are just curious and maybe they are just trying to read up on the industry. So they're clicking around, maybe they request a demo. All of a sudden, if you don't have really good qualification procedures in place from an inbound, you know, sales perspective, then someone's spinning their wheels, hopping on the phone, teaching them more, showing them a demo, when in reality, this they were just kind of taking a flyer and weren't really interested in taking your product seriously or considering to buy it. So there's almost an element here where as the bar is lowered from a level of effort that it takes for a customer to really show signs of interest or to engage with your company, because it doesn't now need to be a full-blown in-person meeting, it almost makes that those early top of funnel qualification pieces that much more important.
Yeah, in inside sales, the frontier between sales and marketing gets a lot more blurry, and you're totally right. It's not only just education, you have to ruthless educate, but also be very strict on qualification. And I think the most important qualification thing is mapping to a pain and quantifying that pain. I would say that's an essential skill. Another skill that I would bring that it's relevant, very relevant for inside sales, is doing deeper research and getting more prepared. You have a lot more data at your hands. You have technographics insights, you have Clearbit, you have LinkedIn, you have news, you have Google. You have a real big chance of making an impact in inside sales if you personalize and dedicate to knowing that customer. Leveraging technology and data, there are tools like Chorus and Gong the sales side, the learning cycle for sales is shortening so much after we have call recording and we can listen to calls and evolve. It wasn't feasible in the field sales world in the past. And today, if you were to do that, it would create a weird environment. May we record this in-person meeting? It's an interesting trend. I would say one skill that it's also very relevant in this moment is demonstrating very clear ROI, because the customer is out there, he's comparing you to every other tool, he knows the prices of every competitor, but he doesn't know exactly what business impact those solutions can bring to their business. ROI demonstrates and proving ROI, it became an essential skill in this new world.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. And I really like the point of the importance of ROI, which just gets at sort of the kind of bare bones what SaaS products need to be able to offer is a strong ROI these days. But then you also touched on the importance of being able to really map to that pain and quantify it, which kind of gets at, you know, prioritization, right? Even if there are a number of interesting SaaS products that are all, you know, really, really attractive ROIs, if you can't map to a pain that you can quantify and that the prospect is really feeling, there's a really low probability that what you're digging into is a high priority for them, which just, you know, has like a one-to-one correlation with your odds of the deal closing. So I love those two in tandem. One other question for you, Diego, for companies that are making this transition towards inside sales, what are some of the elements that you think that they'll be kind of pleasantly surprised by with this change? And what are some of the potential hurdles or blind spots that they should watch out for? And you kind of just touched on one, which is the fact that all of your calls are recorded, which makes coaching and learning best practices across the team much easier, but would love to hear about any others.
I think if I'm coming from a purely field sales world and jumping into the inside sales world, my first realizations and myth busting would come towards how measurable everything is and how trackable and how you can build hyper efficiency through combining a decent technology stack and great sales skills in your team. This very measurable universe, it's fascinating. And it's something that it's a lot less feasible for purely field sales. Another surprise and thing, it's you really can sign big deals through inside sales. In my personal experience, we had signed a few big deals before through inside sales, but it really accelerated. Our enterprise sales team is landing really sizable deals without any visit, without anything. And that's fascinating for me. I would say these are the main two that come to mind.
Great. And so now I'd love to dive in a little bit more into Rock, right? So Rock, it's a global content marketing platform. You live and breathe content every day. How does that fit into the picture here? Is content that much more important because of this accelerated trend toward inside sales and the education component that you mentioned? And really, kind of how should sales reps making this transition and their leaders think about content and how to leverage it in this context?
That's a really good question. A fun fact about me, when I started, I had zero sales experience. I need a little bit of digital marketing and I knew how to code. So the first thing we did when we started the company was set up a blog and start generating traffic and leads. And very soon we were generating a very big volume of leads. And we noticed that people wouldn't buy purely self-service what we were selling. They would need a human to help. And that's when we started assembling our first sales team. It started in our initial market was Brazil. We then expanded to Mexico. Today we have teams in Mexico, Brazil, Canada, and the US. We have both field and inside sales teams. Everyone is inside right now. And everyone leverages content into the process. We have 7 million visits to our blog every month, 50,000 new contacts. We really have to optimize for scale when it comes to inside sales. And our content helps a lot. So if you're a sales rep and you need to understand the role of content, I would say the first thing is content is the most scalable way to save your time on calls. And sometimes you don't add a lot of value to the customer by describing what your product does or how to do something on your product. You add value by learning about their problems and their challenges and connecting those to your product. So leveraging content, articles, videos, reports to let them self-educate and to supplement your sales, it becomes a really valuable skill and a time saver. Another one that I think it's super relevant, it's content means data. So if you send a prospect to download an ebook or an assessment or play with your online ROI calculator, you will collect a lot of data. You will know how many employees they do have, how many sales reps, how much they made in revenues. And it's all a matter of proving that there is value in the content after they fill those forms. This data helps you to really personalize your messaging, to map pain points and be hyper relevant. It all comes to leveraging it. Before every call, I, as a sales rep, jump into the CRM. I look into the data fields. I see, oh, this guy has 1,000 employees. He's in this industry. Our historical ACV for this industry is X. Okay, it really makes you more productive when you leverage content and forms to collect data. My personal favorite are interactive ROI calculator, because if you send to the customer or to the prospect a calculator, how many visits you would have, how many leads you would get if you purchased our solution, you know everything you can about that customer to personalize your message and increase your chances of closing the deal. I also would say that content creates a magic thing for the brand and for your authority. People prefer buying from someone that taught them something new. So when you attract your customers with content and you supplement the education and the value you add as a sales rep with additional content, you create preference. People will choose to buy from you rather than the company that didn't provide great information and resources. So content is your friend. If you're in sales, it's very important that sales and marketing collaborate a lot and close the loop on which content to produce, what are the customer pains that we need to cover, what are the industries, because this blurriness created between sales and marketing by this new context, it's actually a very powerful thing. And teams that adapt and collaborate, they have a lot of success.
And so I really love that way of looking at it in terms of content being this high leverage tool that is essential as you scale your team and your sales process, being really a critical piece that can help accelerate your sales process, that you're spending less time on the phone walking through some really, you know, very basic rudimentary functionality about your product. And that's something you can send over in an article or in a demo. And same thing with, as you scale your team, this additional benefit of training the sales team. You know, if you've got all the content there that's speaking to the pain points of your ICP and your buyer persona, it's another just great tool that we've seen used in onboarding playbooks. You mentioned at the end there, the blurred line between marketing and sales, the importance of them staying in lockstep when it comes to what are the pain points that clients are caring about, just making sure that the content that's being produced is relevant and useful. Are there any ways that you all have kind of systematized that internally, whether it's through a regular meeting cadence, maybe it's Slack channels? Are there any kind of tips there for how to encourage that type of collaboration and make sure that it doesn't break down, especially as the team gets really dispersed across different geos?
Yeah, I'm going to go a little bit about the system, but I really would like to focus, before going into the systems thing, bring it on the mindset and an anecdote and share something that happened, I think, 2 weeks ago. Our sales team is really technical, knows the product well, but there are some very specific use cases that they were being asked and they couldn't do that because some of those were technical things where you need to set up some scripting in one of our platforms. And they mentioned that to marketing. And 1 week after, we got like 30 Loom videos for specific use cases that they would get asked often, everything on our wiki. And next time you get asked this, send this video. Here it is. It's collaboration and willingness to share back with marketing and marketing willingness to embrace that. I think it's the most important piece. We, in terms of systems, we really work hard to make the metrics match, and we track the whole funnel from and all the conversion rates as a shared obligation. We held, for instance, marketing gets notified if an MQL was not called within a period. Sales is notified if we are below quota on marketing, and they propose webinars, interesting initiatives. And we have, I think, bi-weekly meeting between the two teams. These meetings, they go through the metrics, but also to the challenges and pains. Like, we are below on this KPI here. What could we do to move people from A to B? And some really clever or innovative, sometimes obvious things as well, come from this, and this agility and the ability to collaborate and work together. I think that's critical. Right now, marketing and sales are perceived as almost one single thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So one piece that you touched on earlier when you were kind of talking about the different offices of Rock Content that I want to dive deeper into is how international growth plays a role here. You've got sales folks selling into the US from Brazil and Mexico. You've got US-based reps. Are there any advice or lessons that you've learned as you've spun up an inside sales team selling into international markets that you think other folks could learn from?
I think when selling to international markets with global aspirations, one very important aspect on your team is this sales diversity. People from all races, geographies, beliefs, specializations, but one single sales culture. So obviously you might need some small tweaks for a specific market. You're gonna sometimes need to localize pricing, but the overall sales mindset and processes and messages, they have to be shared across the board. So I would really incentivize anyone that is thinking about a global sales team and a remote sales team to invest a lot in building a shared knowledge repository, shared rituals for anyone, anywhere they are, same metrics, same processes, and enforce that it's one single team. It's not the US team or the Canada team. It's really one big global team. Another thing that I would say that it's been helpful and a lot of companies are having success with us, I'm glad we are as well, is having native English speakers, expats selling inside, say, that live outside of the US, selling to the US market. You have a huge cost advantage when you compete, and you can cover leads that wouldn't be touched by the typical company because you have a cost structure that enables you to sell into smaller businesses. So when you're globally, you can turn that into a competitive advantage to reduce your customer acquisition costs.
Well, Diego, we've covered a ton of ground. You know, we've talked about sort of the history of this shift from field sales to inside sales, where that sits today. We've talked about how content plays an important role here, how folks can actually go about and starting to make that shift if they haven't already with this MVP approach, and also the international piece and how that fits into the bigger picture. Are there any final thoughts, tips, or tricks that you want to leave folks with to summarize?
Oh man, I think you sucked everything out of my brain. I would say inside sales is really here to stay. You have to have at one point or other an inside sales team. It's time to embrace. COVID is an accelerator for you, for every founder right now. Embrace, experiment, gradually commit. Don't just shift everything, but validate and do small checkpoints and you will define, your company will define. But that's pretty much it.
Awesome. Well, Diego, thank you so much for coming on the show. We loved having you.
Thanks, man.
And that's our show. So if you liked this episode and you want to hear more, subscribe to the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. We'll see you next week.